This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and even an online store with the Squarespace Commerce feature. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TREK6. And also by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me again today, as he is every week, is my co-host, Matthew Rushy. But, Matthew, what is that? What are you saying? Something's going on. I can't understand you today. There is something wrong with my universal translator. What language are you speaking? Do I need to get Wayoon to come in here and translate for me?
Oh, Chris. Well, that was fun. No, I'm sorry. I was wearing my Breen helmet, and it's really comfortable. It's kind of warm here in Dallas now. It's summer and all. And so I just put that on. It's got a really nice refrigeration unit, but it also translates whatever language you're speaking in into Breen, and that is a really hard language to understand.
It really, really is. And today we're going to talk about the Breen. This is kind of an unusual topic for us, but you know, the Breen are this alien race in Star Trek who they actually play a really important part in the culmination of the Deep Space Nine story. So we feel like we know the Breen because they're there a lot at the end, but we don't really know much about them. I think they're probably the most prominent alien race in Star Trek about whom we know the least about.
And this, what's so funny about the Breen is that the bits that we have seen on screen, they're really cool. And they're the race that I would really like to know more about and would have liked to have seen more often. Because, you know, after a while, I've seen Ferengi enough. I've seen Klingons done to death. You know, it would have been great if the Breen had just been more a part of Deep Space Nine. I am somewhat thankful, though, that there is still a race that I don't know everything about it. I can know so much about Klingons, but the Breen are one of those races where, in some ways, I guess they probably work well actually as a mystery.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think they do work well as a mystery, and they were always a mystery. You know, they've been around in dialogue going back into the Next Generation, and they were kind of like a joke. It was like, when something goes wrong, let's blame it on the Breen, because we really don't know who they are. They're just out there somewhere. We've never seen them. So it's very easy to just write a line referring to the Breen. And it's kind of a throwaway line, and then you move on. And it helps you explain something, but then you don't have to delve in it anymore. And you don't have to worry about violating continuity or canon, because they're just out there.
Chris, I think actually what the Breen are the ice cream trucks of the galaxy. Because if anybody does refrigeration, Well, it's the Breen. And so that's my guess, is that, you know, you're warping in space and you hear that. And everybody's like, oh, can we get ice cream, Captain? Please, please, me. And then, of course, you have to stop and, you know, the Breen give you your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle ice cream with the gumdrops as eyeballs.
Yeah, except that it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Gorn ice cream, because this is Star Trek.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Gorn. Man, that was my favorite Star Trek series show. Goodness, I wish they'd bring that one back.
But Matthew, you're more right than you think. You remember what Sisko said about the Breen in For the Uniform? He said, if anyone knows how to keep things cold, it's the Breen. So they really are. Their ships are like the ice cream trucks of the galaxy.
So true. So I'm excited. I'm hoping that they're going to stop by my neighborhood because, one, I could use some refrigeration, and two, ice cream sounds fantastic right now.
But, you know, I am glad that I like the fact that the DS9 writers chose the Breen to play this pivotal role in the Dominion War, to take a race that had just been referenced through the Next Generation, you know, and they're even referenced on Voyager. In Logium, the Doctor says that the Breen have children at a very, very young age. And so you have this race that's referenced all around, but here they take them and they make them a very important factor in the conflict between the Federation and the Dominion. And they do it by still keeping them a mystery. And by keeping them a mystery, they're able to endow their ships with these incredibly powerful weapons. You know, they're able to have this race make the very, very bold attack on San Francisco, you know, something that even Klingons don't do. And again, because they are mysterious, you don't really have to explain very much about why this stuff is happening or why it works.
That's one of the things I think, Chris, that really does work so well by bringing them in. You know, we didn't even know what their ships looked like until Penumbra and when Dax and Worf are taken captive. And the only thing we really knew about their weapons is the fact that they use Type 3 disruptors, because we heard that in Star Trek Generations as a throwaway line.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they can come on the scene and really turn the tide of the war because they have this special weapon, that completely makes sense. You know, the writers really don't even have to explain it other than say, oh, well, it's the Breen, and we've never seen this weapon before because we don't fight them. And it was awesome, I think. It worked really well. So I enjoyed getting to see them come in and be a turning point in the war. In fact, reading on Memory Alpha, there's thoughts, at least from fans, that maybe the Breen didn't enter of their own volition, but they had been taken over by the founders in the high levels so that they were forcing right. them into the war. So that makes it even more exciting.
Right, right. Because there is a Breen hostage scene. And so it kind of implies that a Breen had been replaced by a changeling. And so, yeah, it's great speculation. You know, who knows? You know, there's also speculation that the Breen kind of sit on the sidelines, but when they see opportunity arise, then they jump on that opportunity. But then they're also happy to fall back if things kind of don't go their way, as they did when the Cardassians joined the Federation Alliance and turned on the Jem'Hadar and on the Dominion. And then the Breen, you know, fell back and kind of disappeared again.
Yeah.
Which itself is kind of speculation, because all that happened at the very, very end of the series. So we didn't get to see what happened after they fell back, but we know that that's what happened.
And that's one of the things, too, that made me wish that Deep Space Nine had got another season, because yeah. There was so much going on. It would have been great to see them get a chance to wrap up the end of that war and see some of the repercussions of it. But luckily, you know, we get the eighth season in the novels, and they do that pretty well. Right. So.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I thought it would be fun, Matthew, to run down a list of things that we know about the Breen or that we think we know about the brain. And when I read these, the phrase that comes into my mind is mysterious brain glowing green, because they have that cool, you know, like green light across the top of their helmets. So I was reading up on the brain and both what we know from the television series and what we know from the expanded universe. And here are some things that we think we know about the brain. First of all, the brain have no blood, and the brain have no liquid circulatory system of any kind. Now, that sounds kind of weird, right?
Yeah, I'm not really sure like how that works. Don't you kind of need to be a non-organic life form to not have any circulatory system? Maybe that's just me, but I feel like you can't be an organic being and not have something running through your non-existent veins.
Well, that brings us to the speculation that the brain are a silicon-based life form.
See, and that's what I was thinking. That would be really interesting if they had ever, and maybe that's why that's actually their voice. It's not a vocal modulator. That would be really cool.
Well, that also brings us to the speculation that the brain are made of ammonia and gelatin, which is held together at cold temperatures because their home world is allegedly very frigid, but it evaporates at high temperatures, or at least temperatures that would be high for them, maybe normal for us, which is why they have to wear those refrigeration suits. And if that's the case, it's suggested that the gelatin serves the purpose of blood, of circulating vital nutrients and such that they need as life forms in order to survive.
That would have been so cool if they could have pulled that off. You know, we had seen the founders in Deep Space Nine, and they were a really interesting race. The fact that they're liquid, they're not humanoid at all, and so that was fantastic. So to be able to see kind of like a silicon based life form like this that is also bipedal would have been really, really interesting.
So yeah, maybe they're bipedal or maybe they're not, and those suits give them the shape to make them bipedal. I don't
know. They like pour themselves into the suit.
They pour themselves. or actually the ammonia being like a gas, it's a gaseous ammonia, and it's they pump it into the suits, I guess. Or maybe it is liquid ammonia and they pour it into the suits and it's like a mold. But you know, when I think gelatin and I think mold, I keep thinking Jello, and then I'm picturing like if you pull the helmet off of the brain, they all look just like Bill Cosby, and he just offers you a Jello pudding pop. I'm sorry, I couldn't help but go there.
That's okay. Now I just want pudding.
Okay, so this is one of the weird speculations. Moving on to their brains, we think we know that their brains have four lobes. And this helps them be immune to the powers of empaths like Troy, just like the Ferengi are.
Yeah, this is really, really interesting. The fact that, you know, and I always find it interesting for a race that an empath can't impact. They can't pick up any brain patterns. And, you know, really at this point, it would make sense then that they were a silicon-based life form that doesn't have any, you know, circulating blood or anything like that, that it'd be so foreign to an empath that they wouldn't be able to penetrate. You know, it'd be kind of like mind-melding with a rock, I guess, but I guess Spock could do that with the Horta, so I'm not really, you know, I'm not really sure exactly how all that works and why, but it's one of those things, it's just kind of said, oh, you know, we can't do this. So, and it does make them.
Or maybe it's not the four lobes. Maybe it's the coating of gelatin around the four lobes.
You know, it probably is because, you know, somebody like Troy just kind of want to lick all the gelatin, you know, pudding like, off, you know, so.
It's like chocolate Jello pudding.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And Troy can't resist. That. So.
Oh, goodness. Okay, well, I already mentioned that they reproduce at a very young age, around the same age as a third grade human child, which is kind of bizarre. I don't want to think about that. But again, that is what the doctor said on Voyager in Elogium. We also know that they entertain their offspring with nursery rhymes. That's kind of a weird, considering how little we know about the Breen, that's kind of a weird little bit to throw out there.
You know what, Chris? And I was trying to think of what kind of nursery rhymes did they do for their kids? You know, do they you know, Mother Goose, or do they decide to take those Mother Goose and just make them more appropriate for Breen children? And if that's the case, what's appropriate for Breen children? I mean, I don't really know. Do you talk about, like, lots of death, or is it more like unicorns and ponies?
I think it's ice unicorns and ice ponies.
Oh, nice. Like do they, and this is completely off topic, Chris, but do they do a lot of ice carvings with chainsaws there? And then a lot of finger incidents?
Probably, yeah. And I'm also thinking that on the Breen homeworld, the Care Bears may be quite popular. I think the ice blue Care Bear is probably the most popular.
Man, this is, I'm really wondering what this world's going to be like, because maybe the ice blue Care Bear is actually real there. Like, that's, you know, you remember on Battlestar Galactica, the original version, that weird dog robot thing?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the Breen have
Muffet?
Yeah, ice blue Care Bears as their, you know, pets.
Maybe so. And I'm wondering, how do you make things rhyme in the Breen language?
See, that rhymed.
That was perfect, yes. Okay, what else do we know to completely flip what we were just talking about around? We also know that they use slave labor, because we saw an indiscretion that they were using Bajorans to mine dilithium ore. That's basically as far away as you can get from Care Bears and nursery rhymes.
Very true. I think it is really interesting to see that the Breen seem to be a culture that doesn't like to work. So they just enslave people to do their work for them, and they just stand around the coffee pot, or the water filtration unit, or I don't know what do silicon based life forms stand around if you don't really need to drink.
Right. If they even are silicon-based, which we really don't know. But let me ask you, Matthew, if you had a full-body refrigeration suit on all the time, would you want to work? Wouldn't you just stand around and just enjoy the cool air?
That, or wish I had a jacket.
you're wearing a jacket underneath your refrigeration suit because you're cold.
Exactly.
This just doesn't seem practical.
Yeah. Since there's so much about the Breen that we don't know, it just makes me wonder, if they need a jacket. So, but yeah, having slave labor, though, too, really makes them different than a lot of the other races that we see in Star Trek. We mm-hmm. don't really see this a lot. And the fact that they still have no qualms about taking people captive and making them work without, paying them or treating them well, is quite unique in the Star Trek universe. I think, really some of the only races we've seen do that are the Orions and their, right. Underground slave. It was probably where the Breen get their slaves from, is the Orion slave market, is my guess.
Maybe. But of course, in Deep Space Nine, the Cardassians enslaving the Bajorans. This is one connection that, does make the Breen and the Cardassians possibly a good mm-hmm. match
right.
as they join forces in the Dominion War. Although you have to imagine that the Breen and the Cardassians would never have actually joined forces as two groups themselves. They just happen to be pulled together by the Dominion.
Yeah, and it, especially with the, the Breen seem like the kind of race that would definitely just want to be on the winning side, So then afterwards, you would leave them alone.
Right.
And so I always thought, honestly, that that was one of the reasons why they had joined. It's just they figured the Dominion was going to win, and they wanted to be left alone afterwards because they don't really seem to have gotten involved in internal affairs of other nations. They just kind of raid people when they want to. They take some slaves when they want to. This was a really interesting move, which I think really lends credibility to the fact that they probably didn't get into this war because they wanted to. I feel like they were probably tricked into it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe so. But then there is the weird twist that the second leader of the Breen during the Dominion War, who was thought Pran, was actually promised and enticed by the female changeling by the promise of being handed Romulus and Earth at the end of the war. And that helped to convince Pran, you know, to continue to pour forces into the battle. And I think what you say about them wanting to be left alone at the end of the war, that's pretty much what we get about the Breen throughout Star Trek, that they are this sort of, they're kind of, I don't know if I want to call them xenophobic, but they are kind of isolationists. It seems that way. But then, you know, the promise that they would actually be in charge of Romulus and Earth is enticing to them. So it's almost like maybe if they see the opportunity to dominate, they'll jump on it. But if it's going to really require a lot of effort on their part, then they'll just fall back into their own space.
Yeah, they feel like lazy opportunists is really what the Breen are. They want to take the easiest road to getting somewhere. That's why all their space lanes in their part of space are really short. You know, they don't have to go too far, which is why they all are ice cream trucks, because they're ice cream addicts, and they don't really want to have to go too far to get ice cream. So, you know, they just make sure they all have it, and that way you can, if you run out on your ship, you there's one just a few light years down the road.
Well, you know, we saw so few Breen, actually, in Star Trek that there are only two Breen who we know anything about who got names. And that is Gore, and then Pran, who I just mentioned. And Gore, Thought Gore, with Thought being a military rank that appears to be higher than a legate, because there was this conversation between Gore and Damar, where Damar makes a comment to him. This was in Strange Bedfellows, and Damar makes a comment to Gore, and had something to do with ranks, and Gore tells him, well, you should have your universal translator adjusted, maybe suggesting that I don't have to take orders from you, Damar, because you're a lowly legate, and I'm a thought.
A thought and a memory, or...
I don't know, it's T-H-O-T.
Such a strange... Thought. It's one of those things, too, about the Breen, is that everything is just strange about them, you know? A thought. Yeah. What are you? It just sounds like they're stuttering.
It is. And, you know, continuing the kind of jokes about the Breen, in the video game Conquest, there is a third Breen who gets a name, and his name is Rong, R-O-O-N-G. But his rank is also Thought, and so his name is Thought Rong.
I like that one. That's my favorite Breen right there.
That's your favorite Breen, Thought Wrong.
Yeah, Thought Wrong.
Basically, it's like Worf, right? Everything that Worf suggests, apparently he thought wrong because he's always shot down.
Exactly.
I guess the same was the case for this this Breen commander.
Yeah, that poor guy. I feel so bad for him. Like he's the Worf of the Breen Confederacy.
That's right. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Breen and why they're wearing masks in the first place, and maybe why they're so mysterious. Ira Stephen Bear was talking about how when it came time to come up with a new race, he said he just wasn't really in the mood to come up with a new alien race. So he said, let's not see them. Let's just put them in costume because they normally live in the cold. And that way they just throw together a costume. They don't have to worry about actually creating a new alien race that we're going to see, they're going to have to develop. I thought that was pretty funny. It's kind of like, we need a new race. Yeah, I don't feel like much. And he doesn't say this, but what I've always thought is, and you know what? You remember Return of the Jedi when Princess Leia went in to rescue Han Solo from Jabba the Hutt and she wore her Bosch costume, Princess Leia's Bosch cosplay? That's really cool. Let's just make them look like that.
Well, and you know, that I think one of the interesting things that they didn't do on Star Trek as much is that, you know, they always went for the forehead of the month or something like that. You know, in Star Wars, you could put somebody in an outfit and a helmet or whatever, and you weren't quite sure who they were underneath. And so your mind just went crazy trying to figure that out, you know, like Boba Fett in the beginning. Is he human? Is he, what is he? You know, he's just in a helmet. He's in this suit. The Breen are just like that. And it actually is, I think, a fantastic idea. The fact that there's so much mystery around them, it's exciting.
It is. It's very cool. I love the idea. And he also said, and this is quite interesting to me, that the voice, the Breen language that we've been making fun of ever since we started the show today, was actually inspired by the guitar feedback on Lou Reed's album Metal Machine Music.
Now, that's just funny because it just kind of sounds like, you know, like Ben Burtt, you know, the Star Wars sound designer. You just would go out and do random things to make weird sounds, and just, oh, nope, that's no, we didn't even have to do that. We were listening to an album. It had some screechy sounds to it. Just use that. That's fine.
It works. And somehow I find it interesting that Wayun and the female changeling, they can understand Breen somehow.
I'm not sure how that's a language, but I mean, again, if you were some sort of silicon-based life form, you know, maybe that's what your language would sound like. It's kind of like how Tholian sound when they speak, just in these screeches. And so,
The Tholian screeching.
Yeah, it's not too strange, but...
Well, I think, and again, we don't know that the Breen are silicon-based. That's some speculation based on comments that have been made. But in the case of Tholians, I mean, you can think of it as they are crystals. And if you think about sound waves being modulated through crystal, that would make sense that their language would be some sort of screeches like that.
Yeah, and so, I don't know. It makes me wonder if sometimes being bored isn't really just the best way to create an alien species. You know, like, we're at the end. But they end up creating something that's actually really fascinating. You know, from
it really is,
their boredom, we come with all these questions. So not too bad.
And, you know, these costumes, these refrigeration suits have become so much of a legend, I guess you would say, in Star Trek, maybe because they're so unusual compared to everything else in Star Trek. But when they did the 40 Years of Star Trek collection auction that they held in New York, they actually sold the suit that was worn by Thought Pren, who was in Tacking Into the Wind, The Dogs of War, What You Leave Behind. You know, he was the second commander, as I mentioned earlier. They sold that suit for $7,200.
Somebody was really hoping it was a real refrigeration suit, I think.
I think so. I'm pretty sure it was bought by someone in Texas, right? Who was just really hoping.
That or Arizona.
That it was going to work. Well, one other thing I wanted to get your thoughts on, Matthew, is the fact that, you know, we've talked about this on the Ready Room before when we did our show about indiscretion. They say that no one has ever seen a Breen outside of its refrigeration suit and lived to tell about it. But Kira and Dukat both steal Breen's suits and wear them in that episode. Now, I know what my personal canon is because we worked it out on the Ready Room, but what do you think? How did they get those refrigeration suits without actually seeing Breen?
Well, I think what happens is that if you attack a Breen and you try to take off its armor and you're successful, the Breen inside is automatically incinerated. So that way, nobody else has seen a Breen except for a Breen. So I think that that would be my personal canon. That they attack these Breen, they take off the helmet forcefully, and it immediately incinerates the person inside, therefore allowing nobody to ever see a Breen alive.
Okay. Well, you know, that speculation ties into the idea that they are ammonia and gelatin based and that they evaporate at normal temperatures. So
that's, yep, Chris, I put a lot of thought into this today. I was just sitting at work the whole time thinking, okay, well, how does this not happen? And that was the best one I could
come. Did you go around the office and ask people, how do you think you could get a suit off of a Breen without seeing a Breen? And then your colleagues just kind of give you a blank stare, like, what is wrong with you, Matthew?
Yeah, they all thought I said green, and then I had to be like, no, Breen. And then they were like, is that a new kind of cheese? And yeah, so they weren't much help, but I did ponder this a while. I think that's actually kind of a fun idea, that if they were something like ammonia and gelatin, that, you know, you just take the helmet off and they would immediately just evaporate. So,
right. Another speculation that I've read before is the idea that the Breen have another suit on. Mm-hmm. Underneath their refrigeration suit. So if you take the refrigeration suit off of them, they're still hidden under yet another suit, which kind of ties into your idea that they might be wearing a jacket underneath there because they're too cold.
See, that's where I got the jacket part, because I had read that earlier today about, you know, the fact that they have another suit on. So they never leave home without their jacket. You know, if you've had a girlfriend, Chris, or you have your wife, and they're like, no, I don't want to bring a jacket. And you're like, honey, you're going to get cold. And they're like, no, I don't want to bring it. It doesn't go with this outfit. And you just know you're going to end up having to give your jacket to her. Well, the Breen always come prepared with a jacket. So they're never without their jacket.
So Breen dating is a little bit easier in that respect.
Exactly. You don't They're have to worry prepared. About it. Yeah. whereas, you know, in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it's always bring your towel. Yes. For the Breen, it's always have a jacket.
That's right. Always know where your jacket is. That's what you have to do if you're a Breen. My personal canon is a lot simpler. My personal canon is simply that two Breen were taking a shower, and Kira and Dukat snuck up and stole the suits while they were in the shower.
That's... do ammonium gelatin-based life forms take a shower? Seems like that's a big mess to clean up.
It could be. And actually, that leads us to another topic that we want to talk about. And that is what we found out about the Breen after Deep Space Nine. Because one of the great things about the Breen is the fact that they are very mysterious, which means that unlike most other races in Star Trek, the writers of the novels have been able to really, really have fun exploring this mysterious race. You know, who are the Breen? And what we have found out in the novels is that maybe the Breen aren't silicon-based. Maybe they aren't ammonia and gelatin-based. Maybe they are not even an actual race at all.
Well, and what's really interesting is David Mack came up with this in his idea of zero-sum game, and revealed that they really actually comprise several different species. And so in their society, people are judged by their skills rather than their physical appearance. And so that's why they wear this armor that you know, makes everybody look the same, basically that makes them look like stormtroopers, and so that they are judged only by what they do and the skills that they have, and not the fact that they're pretty or fat or whatever. And so that's actually a pretty interesting idea, that a whole society would be built around this idea of anonymity, and that who you showed yourself to when you took your helmet off would have a really close contact with you. Like, they'd be somebody you really trusted. So that's very, very alien.
It is very, very alien. And I thought it was a really interesting idea. And in Zero Sum Game, when Bashir and Serena go to the Breen homeworld and they start investigating, and they find out a lot more about the Breen, and that's how Starfleet Intelligence gets to know a bit more about the makeup of the Breen Confederacy. And they found out there for sure that there are four different races from different worlds within the Breen Confederacy. There's the Silwan, there's the Fenrisaw, there's the Paklu, and there's the Amanuri. And that these different species, actually different races, actually make up Breen. So inside those suits are actually different alien races. And so Breen is a society, not a race and not a species. And then later on, we find out about a fifth species in Plagues of Night, and that's the Virenat. And then there's also speculation that there could be as many as a dozen or more additional races that are also part of what we call the Breen.
Well, it's funny, Chris, because a few of those, I just want to say Gesundheit to you, because I thought you had just sneezed.
Yeah, right.
But I did think it was interesting that they actually used some of the ideas of what these different races are for some of the ideas we talked about. You know, the Aminori are actually, they actually do wear the refrigeration suits because they will evaporate if they don't have them. They don't have the blood. So this is very cool that they worked in some of those ideas that fans have put together of why the Breen are in these suits in the first place. And so that all of them look the same. And this is a fun species because there's so much you could do here. There's so much. And it really made me want to explore more why would you choose to be a part of this society? Because it's so utterly different than every other society that we've seen that really is based on relationship, and relationship usually takes face to face. And so if you're both staring at the same face, that seems very strange to have a relationship. And so how all that works together is really kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it's a very unique idea. And like you said, that these guys will evaporate, the Aminori will evaporate. The Paklu have four-lobed brains. So, you know, the idea that the Breen have four-lobed brains finds its place with this species. And the, you know, speculation also that Breen had some kind of long snouts, you know, and that's why the masks had the big snout coming out of the front. They worked that in to the Fenrisaw, who were actually furry humanoids who did have long snouts, kind of like an Arctic wolf. And so the helmet has the snout so that when those particular aliens who are part of the Breen Confederacy are wearing the suits, their snout can fit into there. So then you would have other races that don't have the snout. And I guess, I don't know, it's just hollow up in there. I don't know. Maybe they keep their wallet in there. I don't know.
Their don't keys, actually need rattling the, around.
Yeah. It's like a little glove compartment for them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. You keep a drink in there, you know, so you can just, with a straw, you know, you keep like a, you know, a Camelback, you know, and so you're never thirsty.
Something like that. So it's very interesting, and then the language could work so that, because all these different races are speaking different languages, somehow it's translated into this kind of staticky, mechanical-sounding language, which is then translated back into the language of whichever race a particular breen it belongs to. And so it's sort of like a, it's almost like you're encoding, you know, your conversation so that outsiders can't understand it, but breen can understand, plus they can understand it going between different languages within the breen confederacy.
It's so interesting too, Chris, just to how many humanoid type species that they come up with for Star Trek, and they're all pretty much the same. You know, we've got bipedal aliens, and it's just so funny that we just let it go because, you know, that's what was easy in the 60s to do. Whereas, you know, we know aliens would probably look much, if not anything like us, if they really are out there.
Probably
so,
not, yeah.
Coming up with all these different aliens that are still humanoid and still fit in the breen outfit, but, you know, they don't have any blood, they evaporate, but they can still fit well enough inside the same outfit that, you know, a furry humanoid can.
I'm picturing if Kienzer's homeworld were inside the breen confederacy, it would be one of those cases where if you open up the suit, there are like three of them standing on each other's shoulders to fill up the suit, you know.
Like the Munchkins from Munchkin Land or something.
All right. Well, we've run through what we think we know about the breen all the way through to how they've been developed in the expanded universe and how they've been fleshed out. So, Matthew, this has been a fun conversation today. It's a kind of a different kind of orb, but I've had fun talking about the breen. What do you have any final thoughts about this race?
You know, it's sad that we did have to wait till the end of Deep Space Nine to really get something on this race, which also makes me sad that, you know, we had to wait so long for other races. Like in Enterprise, we finally got to see Orions and Andorians and Tellarites, you know. There was so much that they could do in Star Trek with some of the races that we had seen because we hadn't gotten anything about them. And I love that they just decided, we're going to use the breen. We're finally going to start telling you a little bit about it. And we're bored, so we're going to come up with these ideas about why we don't have to show you all these things. But it actually turned out for the better because of that. You know, it reminded me of how limitations in filmmaking and in TV shows can actually help creativity. And I think with the breen, we really see that this works because they put a limitation on themselves and it made them think of a really smart idea. One that, you know, you can spend hours just kind of debating about what and how and who, and, you know, or give a writer like David Mack, a whole book to try and, you know, tell you more about this species that we haven't heard a lot about. So yeah, this is such a fun race and just one of the many benefits of getting to talk more, getting to talk deeper about the things that we see in these shows.
Definitely. I like the fact that at the end of the war, they needed to throw one last challenge in there for the Federation and its allies. But that was, I think, a big writing challenge because who are you going to put in there? You know, you can't bring Ferengi or some other race in there because you wonder, like, well, why did these people just now get involved in this conflict? And you can't bring someone completely unknown in there either because then as the viewer, you feel like it's a cheap gimmick. Like, okay, here's someone we've never heard of before coming in at 5 minutes till midnight. And it's silly. It doesn't make any sense. It's kind of how I felt. And of course, this wasn't at the end, but on Lost, when they introduced the others, I'm like, wait a minute, you're supposed to be alone on an island. Why are there other people on the island that you had no idea were there?
Right.
Okay, well.
Exactly.
You know, and I mean, and they made it work and they found a way because they did it early enough in the series that they could then build the rest of the series around the fact that these other people were there. But when it first happened, I was like, really, guys? Okay, this doesn't make any sense. So here finding an unknown race that we had heard of before was a brilliant move, I thought, in the writing. And keeping them mysterious made it a lot of fun for me. So for some reason, I love the Breen, and I can't really explain why I like them other than they have cool outfits and they're a great mystery.
Well, you know what, Chris? I know how much you like great outfits in Star Trek. I mean, you can't stop talking about Admiral's uniforms. And I really know it's because you're jealous, and you really just wish that you could have Project Runway Starfleet Edition or Star Trek Edition. And so, yeah, that's fine. You can like the Breen for just their outfits.
You know who else I think wanted Project Runway or Top Model Star Trek Edition? That would have been UPN back when they were canceling Enterprise, because it would have fit perfectly into their lineup at that point. But you also remind me, Matthew, that I bet refrigeration suit modding is a really big deal on Breen, on the Breen homeworld. Just like, you know, admirals modifying their uniforms, I think customizing your refrigeration suit is a big thing for thoughts to do.
Yeah, oh my goodness. I really can see that happening right now. Although, if they're trying to be, you know, keep their anonymity, if you, you know, jazz it up too much, then people are starting to look at your uniform and how cool you are, and then, you know, the cool Breen wear, you know, Converse, and the not so cool Breen wear Vans is their shoes. So I don't know, you start to run into a problem there, Chris.
Yeah, the teenage Breen, they their refrigeration pants are hanging down halfway down their butt, and they're catching a draft. They're like they're slowly evaporating. You can see the fumes coming out. Yeah. All right. Well, Matthew, let's tell everyone where to find us if they want to share their thoughts or their speculation on the Breen. You can just go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to Matthew and me. You can also go to our forums at trek.fm/forums, and you can talk to other listeners and us about Deep Space Nine, about the Breen, whatever you'd like to talk about. And in social media, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And you can find us on Twitter under username trekfm. And if you'd like to send a voicemail, you can do that now. Just go to the website. Look on any page on the site. You'll see a tab there on the right side of the page that says send voicemail. If you click that, a box will open up and you can record a message using your camera's mic and upload it to us right through that interface as an MP3 file, and we would love to hear from you. Matthew, what if people would like to find you personally?
Well, if you'd like to find me, you can do that on Twitter at MattRushing02. I enjoy talking about all sorts of different things there, so give me a follow and at reply. I talk about movies and books and, you know, all that kind of stuff, Star Trek and, oh goodness, just anything that you want to talk about. And of course, college football will be starting up again soon, so Chris and I will be talking about that as well. Then do Literary Treks, where we talk books and comics. So we'll be talking about some of these things as we're going through the Deep Space Nine Season 8 relaunch book series. So you can find that there. And then I do have a personal blog. So if you just want to see some of the other things I get to write about, other movies, other types of books, anything that I just am enjoying at that point, it's 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, if we want to find you and you haven't quite evaporated yet, where can we do that?
Yeah, I'm going to keep my suit on so I don't evaporate. And if you'd like to find me in my silicon/ammonia gelatin form, you can do that on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username. You can also find some of my writing and, you know, other stuff that I do on my personal website, which is finally back up and running after a redesign. That's at cbrianjones.com. And you'll also find me elsewhere on the network every week on The Ready Room, where Matthew sometimes joins me, as do many other hosts from all across the Trek FM network and our various shows, as well as other guests. And we talk about all the Star Trek series on that show, as well as movies and sometimes some special topics as well. And you can find that at trek.fm/trr. And if you add 100 to that URL, you'll get our big 100th show. We have 10 people on the panel. That's out right now, and it was a really fun discussion. And we'd also like to invite you to drop by iTunes and leave us a review and a star rating if you enjoy the show. And it only takes about 30 seconds. We love to hear from you. It helps other listeners find the show, and we really appreciate everyone who has done that so far. And the last thing today, we'd like to invite you to support our sponsor for today's show, Trek Fan. Now, Trek Fan is not just a fan club, it's a challenge. And when you go to Trek Fan, you'll explore new places and you'll learn new things, and you'll collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles and complete real-life mission objectives. And along the way, you'll win great prizes. We've had a number of listeners who have headed over there. They've solved that first challenge, and they say it's a very interesting concept. So go over to trekfan.org yourself and see if you can solve that first challenge right now. And we really appreciate Trek Fan for sponsoring today's show.
Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time when we gaze into the orb.